3. Woman as the Temptress. The mystical marriage with the queen goddess of the world represents the hero's total mastery of life. For the woman is life, the hero its knower and master. And the testings of the hero, which were preliminary to his ultimate experience and deed, were symbolical of those crises of realization by means of which his consciousness came to be amplified and made capable of enduring the full possession of the Mother Destroyer, his inevitable bride. With that he knows that he and the Father are one. He is in the Father's place. Thus phrased in extremist terms, the problem may sound remote from the affairs of normal human creatures. Nevertheless, every failure to cope with a life situation must be laid, in the end, to a restriction of consciousness. Wars and temper tantrums are the makeshifts of ignorance. Regrets are illuminations come too late. The whole sense of the ubiquitous myth of the hero's passage is that it shall serve as a general pattern for men and women, wherever they may stand along the scale. Therefore, it is formulated in the broadest terms. The individual has only to discover his own position with reference to this general human formula, and let it then assist him past his restricting walls. Who and where are his ogres? Those are the reflections of the unsolved enigmas of his own humanity. What are his ideals? Those are the symptoms of his grasp of life. In the office of the modern psychoanalyst, the stages of the hero adventure come to light again in the dreams and hallucinations of the patient. Depth beyond depth of self-ignorance is fathomed, with the analyst in the role of the helper, the initiatory priest. And always, after the first thrills of getting underway, the adventure develops into a journey of darkness, horror, disgust, and phantasmagoric fears. The crux of the curious difficulty lies in the fact that our conscious views of what life ought to be seldom correspond to what life really is. Generally, we refuse to admit within ourselves or within our friends the fullness of that pushing, self-protective, malodorous, carnivorous, lecherous fever, which is the very nature of the organic cell. Rather, we tend to perfume, whitewash, and reinterpret, meanwhile imagining that all the flies in the ointment, all the hairs in the soup, are the faults of some unpleasant someone else. But when it suddenly dawns on us, or is forced to our attention, that everything we think or do is necessarily tainted with the odor of the flesh, then, not uncommonly, there is experienced a moment of revulsion. Life, the acts of life, the organs of life, woman in particular as the great symbol of life, become intolerable to the pure, pure soul.
Oh, that this too, too solid flesh would melt, thaw, and resolve itself into a dew. Oh, that the everlasting had not fixed his cannon against self-slaughter. Oh, God! God!
So exclaims the great spokesman of this moment, Hamlet.
A weary, stale, flat, and unprofitable seem to me all the uses of this world. Fiant! Ah, fie! 'Tis an unweeded garden that grows to seed. Things rank and gross in nature possess it merely that it should come to this.
The innocent delight of Oedipus in his first possession of the queen turns to an agony of spirit when he learns who the woman is. Like Hamlet, he is beset by the moral image of the father. Like Hamlet, he turns from the fair features of the world to search the darkness for a higher kingdom than this, of the incest and adultery-ridden, luxurious and incorrigible mother. The seeker of the life beyond life must press beyond her, surpass the temptations of her call, and soar to the immaculate ether beyond.
For a god called him many times, from many sides at once. Ho, Oedipus, thou Oedipus, why are we tarrying? It is full long that thou art stayed for. Come.
Where this Oedipus Hamlet revulsion remains to beset the soul, there the world, the body, and woman above all, become the symbols no longer of victory, but of defeat. A monastic, puritanical, world-negating ethical system then radically and immediately transfigures all the images of myth. No longer can the hero rest in innocence with the goddess of the flesh, for she has become the queen of sin. The Hindu monk Shankaracharya writes,
"So long as a man has any regard for this corpse-like body, he is impure, and suffers from his enemies as well as from birth, disease, and death. But when he thinks of himself as pure, as the essence of the good and the immovable, he becomes free. Throw far away this limitation of a body which is inert and filthy by nature. Think of it no longer. For a thing that has been vomited, as you should vomit forth your body, can excite only disgust when it is recalled again to mind."
This is a point of view familiar to the West from the lives and writings of the saints.
When St. Peter observed that his daughter, Petronilla, was too beautiful, he obtained from God the favor that she should fall sick of a fever. Now, one day when his disciples were by him, Titus said to him, "You who cure all maladies, why do you not fix it so that Petronilla can get up from her bed?" And Peter replied to him, "Because I am satisfied with her condition as it is." This was by no means as much as to say he had not the power to cure her, for immediately he said to her, "Get up, Petronilla, and make haste to wait on us." The young girl, cured, got up and came to serve them. But when she had finished, her father said to her, "Petronilla, return to your bed." She returned and was straightway taken again with the fever. And later, when she had begun to be perfect in her love of God, her father restored her to perfect health. At that time, a noble gentleman named Flaccus, struck by her beauty, came to bid for her hand in marriage. She replied, "If you wish to marry me, send a group of young girls to conduct me to your home." But when these had arrived, Petronilla directly set herself to fast and pray. Receiving communion, she lay back in her bed, and after 3 days rendered her soul up to God. As a child, St. Bernard of Clairvaux suffered from headaches. A young woman came to visit him one day, to soothe his sufferings with her songs. But the indignant child drove her from the room, and God rewarded him for his zeal. For he got up from his bed immediately and was cured. Now the ancient enemy of man, perceiving little Bernard to be of such wholesome disposition, exerted himself to set traps for his chastity. When the child, however, at the instigation of the devil, one day had stood staring at a lady for some time, suddenly he blushed for himself and entered the icy water of a pond in penance, where he remained until frozen to his bones. Another time, when he was asleep, a young girl came naked to his bed. Bernard, becoming aware of her, yielded in silence the part of the bed in which he lay, and rolling over to the other side, returned to sleep. Having stroked and caressed him for some time, the unhappy creature presently was so taken with shame, in spite of her shamelessness, that she got up and fled, full of horror at herself and of admiration for the young man. Still again, when Bernard, together with some friends, one time had accepted the hospitality of the home of a certain wealthy lady, she, observing his beauty, was seized with a passion to sleep with him. She arose that night from her bed, and came and placed herself at the side of her guest. But he, the minute he felt someone close to him, began to shout, "Thief! Thief!" Immediately thereupon, the woman scurried away. The entire house was on its feet, lanterns were lit, and everybody hunted around for the burglar. But since none was found, all returned to their beds and to sleep, with the sole exception of this lady, who, unable to close her eyes, again arose and slipped into the bed of her guest. Bernard began to shout, "Thief!" and again the alarms and investigations. After that, even a third time, this lady brought herself to be spurned in like fashion, so that finally she gave up her wicked project out of either fear or discouragement. On the road next day, the companions of Bernard asked him why he had had so many dreams about thieves, and he replied to them, "I had really to repel the attacks of a thief, for my hostess tried to rob me of a treasure which, had I lost it, I should never have been able to regain." All of which convinced Bernard that it was a pretty risky thing to live together with the serpent, so he planned to be quit of the world and entered the monastic order of the Cistercians.
Not even monastery walls, however, not even the remoteness of the desert, can defend against the female presences. For as long as the hermit's flesh clings to his bones and pulses warm, the images of life are alert to storm his mind. Saint Anthony, practicing his austerity in the Egyptian Thebaid, was troubled by voluptuous hallucinations perpetrated by female devils attracted to his magnetic solitude. Apparitions of this order, with loins of irresistible attraction and breasts bursting to be touched, are known to all the hermit resorts of history. This succubus is the spirit of the Queen of Sheba. Ah, belle ermite, si tu posais ton doigt sur mon épaule, ce serait comme une traînée de feu dans tes veines. La possession de la moindre place de mon corps t'emplira d'une joie plus véhémente que la conquête d'un empire. Avance tes lèvres. Ah, beautiful hermitess, if you set your finger against my flesh, it would be as a strand of fire through thy veins. The possession of the least part of my body should fill thee with a joy more vehement than an empire's conquest. Bring on thy lips. Writes the New Englander Cotton Mather,
"The wilderness through which we are passing to the Promised Land is all filled with fiery flying serpents. But, blessed be God, none of them have hitherto so fastened upon us as to confound us utterly. All our way to heaven lies by dens of lions and the mounts of leopards. There are incredible droves of devils in our way. We are poor travellers in a world which is as well the devil's field as the devil's jail, a world in which every nook whereof the devil is encamped with bands of robbers to pester all that have their faces looking Zionward.